2 Samuel 17, the chapter divisions were not inspired by God. And this is one of those places where I don't think it was a really good place where they put the chapter division, just my opinion, because it kind of comes right in the middle of the story, and I can understand you don't want to have a big old giant long chapter. But you got to remember, I'll just get us a jump start into the text, that David is now on the run. He has escaped, and Absalom is after him. Absalom has an advisor named Ahithophel, and Ahithophel is someone who, as the text says, if you look right the verse right before chapter 17, now in those days the advice Ahithophel gave was like that of one who inquires of God. That was how both David and Absalom regarded all of Ahithophel's advice. This isn't saying that every time Ahithophel gave advice, it was godly advice. It was just saying he was a very, very persuasive man, and he spoke with such authority that it was as if you were listening to God speak himself. So he was a powerful speaker, and everyone listened to him. And that's important to note as we go through this text, because we're actually going to camp on a section that I wasn't intending to camp on for a while, but it was the one that struck me the most after going through this. So, chapter 17, verse 1. Ahithophel said to Absalom, I would choose 12,000 men. You see the text note on I would? Could be I will. It's tough to say, is he saying, well, you know, King, if I were you, I would do X, Y, and Z. Or if he's saying, hey, look, King, I will take care of it all for you and just run the show. Either one works in this case. I'm just going to read I would because that's the text. Or let me, yeah, and it could also be let me. Allow me to do this. So, because there's no question marks in Hebrew, you've got to learn everything just through context. So sometimes something is phrased like, is that a question? So it could be a question, or it could just be a statement. Either way, you get the idea that Ahithophel wants to run the show. Ahithophel's advice is very important, and he loves giving his advice. So, I would choose 12,000 men and set out tonight in pursuit of David. I would attack him while he is weary and weak. I would strike him with terror, and then all the people with him will flee. I would strike down only the king and bring all the people back to you. The death of the man you seek will mean the return of all. All the people will be unharmed. So that's a good plan, right? David's just left the city, not hours ago. He convenes this meeting and says, what should we do? Ahithophel, if you wanted to encapsulate it all in one phrase, it would be strike while the iron's hot. David is tired. He's running. He has no time for organization. We grab our standing army, our militia. Let's run after him. Grab him. Let's kill only David because he's the only one that's really giving us the problems. Kill him. Then the rest of them are going to realize they don't have a leader anymore, and they'll just follow us back, and we will keep Israel intact. Seems like a good thing. And with verse 4, it says, this plan seemed good to Absalom and to all the elders of Israel. Now, you could just write it in your text note or on the side there. Chapter 3, verse 17. It's of 2 Samuel. I didn't put this on PowerPoint because I figured we could just flip to it. 2 Samuel 3:17 says, Abner conferred with the elders of Israel and said, for some time you have wanted to make David your king. I don't know who these elders are, but they're flip-floppers. Here they are. They were the ones that wanted to make David king in the first place. And now David's on the run, and it's like, well, I guess we'll go with the people in power. And the elders said, hey, this sounds like a good idea. And Absalom thought it was a good idea. But Absalom, if we believe that Absalom is a pride-filled man, which, remember, he's the one with the big old long hair and the Fabio look, and he can't believe it's not butter. He's the one that likes to be the center of attention. There's probably a part of him, because out of that whole plan, obviously God is missing, but who else is obviously missing from this grand attack against David? Absalom. Where's Absalom? I mean, here's Ahithophel saying, hey, either I will or let me. We'll go down. I'll kill him. Get the guy. We'll bring him back and it'll be all done. And I'm sure Absalom's going, oh, yeah, that sounds like a good idea. Ahithophel standing, The other guy, Hushai, is standing there and probably realizes that there's probably a better way to do this, to try and fool or trick Absalom into something else. Because all you have to do is play on the guy's ego. So, Absalom said, "Summon also Hushai the Archite so we can hear what he has to say." When Hushai came to him, Absalom said, "Ahithophel has given us this advice. Should we do what he says? If not, give us your opinion." Now, do you remember Hushai? Do you remember why was Hushai there? He's a friend of David. David told him to stay behind, and he told him to do one thing specifically: frustrate the plans and the advice of Ahithophel. So here's his opportunity, and it's amazing that Absalom has actually summoned Hushai into his place, because it just doesn't really make a whole lot of sense to bring in one of David's best friends. But Absalom is a pretty prideful man. He figures, well, what does this guy have to say? So Hushai replies, "The advice Ahithophel has given is not good this time." It's a very political, I love the political state. It's not good this time. It's not that it's bad advice. It's just it's not good for this time. "You know your father and his men." Now I'm going to see if I can read this in a way that maybe Hushai would have presented it. "This advice Ahithophel has given is not good this time. You know your father and his men. They are fighters and as fierce as wild bear robbed of her cubs. Besides, your father is an experienced fighter. He'll not spend the night with the troops. Even now, he is hidden in a cave or some other place. If he should attack your troops first, whoever hears about it will say, 'There has been a slaughter among the troops who follow Absalom.' Then even the bravest soldier, whose heart is like the heart of a lion, will melt with fear. For all Israel knows that your father is a fighter and that those who with him are brave. So I advise you, let all Israel, from Dan to Beersheba, as numerous as the sand on the seashore, be gathered to you, with you yourself leading them into battle. Then we will attack him wherever he may be found, and we will fall on him as dew settles on the ground. Neither he nor any of his men will be left alive. If he withdraws into a city, then all Israel will bring ropes to that city, and we will drag it down to the valley until not even a piece of it can be found." That's good advice now, isn't it? You think about it. That's how I think he probably said it. He's trying to do a couple of things. Now, I remember the first time I read it, Heather and I read through this, and I'm like, I don't get the advice. He's actually essentially saying, Ahithophel's advice, let's grab 12,000 guys, go down, do the dirty work. This guy's advice, Hushai says, let's gather everyone, the whole stinking army from Dan to Beersheba. That would be like us saying from New York to L.A., let's grab everyone. I'm thinking, dude, that's a lot of people. But then you realize it, how long would it take to gather people from Dan to Beersheba to fight? Only going to take a wee bit of time. And during this time, what is David going to be able to do? He's going to be able to move. He's going to be able to fortify. He's going to be able to come up with strategy. Because one thing, that David is a fierce fighter, but we also know that David is extremely intelligent and a really good strategist when it comes to wartime situations. If you think about it, Ahithophel's advice might have actually been the smartest way to go. You want to get him now. He's running. He only was able to grab people as he was leaving town. We don't even know if he's got enough weapons to fight. Let's just go after him now, and we'll take him out. But Hushai goes for the fear tactic. But I think most importantly, that one phrase, with you yourself leading the charge. I mean, doesn't that sound good? King, we're going to gather everybody. We'll have this big army, and you're going to get on the biggest, baddest, whitest horse, the biggest flag, and your hair will be blowing in the wind as you ride down into battle. This sounds like a pretty cool idea. Absalom's a lover, not a fighter. Well, I think so, because I did tell you how he dies, right? Yeah, okay. It's his hair, right? His hair gets caught in a tree. Ah! Oh, it's really gruesome, by the way. We're going to get to that, and you're going to be like, are you serious? And I'll be like, yeah. Absalom is definitely he's not a fighter. I don't think he knows how to fight, but Hushai is trying to frustrate the plans of Ahithophel and playing on his ego. Verse 14, Absalom and all the men of Israel said, the advice of Hushai the Archite is better than that of Ahithophel. Now, curiosity, why do you think they thought that? Was it because Hushai was an eloquent speaker? Was it because Hushai's plan was the better plan? Was it because Hushai knew how to play on the fears and the egos of the people around him? No. There's only one reason, I believe, that they believed that. And that was from the next line. For the Lord had determined to frustrate the good advice of Ahithophel in order to bring disaster on Absalom. It's a great reminder, it really is. It's a great reminder of the impact of words, and never to think yourself so great. Pastors to think themselves so mighty as my persuasive words and my ability to communicate can change anyone's lives. I can change no one's life. I do not have that power. God does. God can use my words and what I say in order to change lives. And that's why we do what we do. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. It doesn't, that strength or might, and even the psalmist says that, the horse and rider God has thrown into the sea. He's the one that controls everything. So, yeah, you always wonder on things like history, if something different had happened, what would have actually done to the course of history? You wonder if they would have just followed Ahithophel's advice because he was the most persuasive, because his ideas did seem like that coming from God. If they would have followed it, how this would have been totally different. But God had already ordained this thing is not going to happen this way. Absalom's going to die, and David will be reinstated because David was the king. So, Hushai, this next part, I'm going to be honest, there is absolutely no application that I could find in it whatsoever. But it sure reads like a really good story. This is just going to be like reading one of those fictional novels, and you're like, I got nothing out of this except for some guilty pleasure time sitting and reading. That's what this next section is. So, we just simply read. Hushai told Zadok and Abiathar the priests, Ahithophel has advised Absalom and the elders of Israel to do such and such. I'm really glad they made that short. Yeah. Well, yeah, the Reader's Digest version. But I advise them to do so-and-so. Yada, yada, yada. Now, send a message immediately and tell David, do not spend the night at the fords in the desert. Cross over without fail, or the king and all the people with him will be swallowed up. Jonathan and Ahimaaz were staying at En-Rogel. A servant girl was to go and inform them, and they were to go and tell King David, for they could not risk being seen entering the city. But a young man saw them and told Absalom. Do you get what's going on here? These two guys were going to be the messengers to go and tell David the secret plans that are going on. But there was that little spy watching them, and they found out that a secret message had been passed on to these two guys to go and tell David something. So they went and told Absalom that this is going to happen. This is crazy. So the two of them left quickly and went to the house of a man in Bahurim. We don't even know this guy. He had a well in his courtyard, and they climbed down into it. His wife took a covering and spread it out over the opening of the well and scattered grain over it. No one knew anything about it. It's secret. They jump in the well. They cover it real quick. They put some seeds on it. looks like you're just drying a bunch of stuff out there. But they're hiding underneath. When Absalom's men came to the woman at the house, they asked, "Where are Ahimaaz and Jonathan?" The woman answered, "They crossed over the brook." I'm sure she said it much more convincingly than that. "They crossed over the brook." The men searched but found no one, so they returned to Jerusalem. Again, this would, you can put some little Mission Impossible music in, you know, right behind this stuff as you're thinking about it. And again, is there any application to this thing? Is there? Hiding. Well, yeah, I mean, yeah, you do think about that with the hiding place and some of the difficulties that were, some of the conscience that hit people as they were hiding Jews and lying to people to save their life. And I think we've talked about that in the past of, is it acceptable to lie? Is it acceptable if that lie saves someone else's life? Here is another case of someone, and you can think of some of the other stories of the of Rahab the prostitute hiding the two spies in Jericho and letting them down by another way. Lots of lies happen. Whether or not God sanctioned it or was pleased by it, we really don't know. We just know that that's what happened. That's why I find it hard to really take an application from it. So, verse 21, after the men had gone, the two climbed out of the well and went to inform King David. They said to him, "Set out, cross the river at once. Ahithophel advised such and such against you." So David and all the people went with him, set out and crossed the Jordan. By daybreak, no one was left who had not crossed the Jordan. You get the sense that what David is doing is Ahithophel gave this advice. We want to make sure that the king doesn't switch around and change his mind. So you better leave and leave quickly because they might assemble a 12,000 men army and come after you. Lo and behold, they don't follow that advice. Verse 23. This is an interesting verse. When Ahithophel saw that his advice had not been followed, he saddled his donkey and set out for his house in his hometown. He put his house in order and then hanged himself. Sorry. Yeah, kind of a bad stuff, isn't it? So he died and was buried in his father's tomb. I'm going to come back to this because that's where I want to end. And I want to make sure we get to the other stuff and it's not like footnotes here. David went to Mahanaim and Absalom crossed the Jordan with all of his men of Israel. Absalom was had appointed Amasa over the army in place of Joab. You may want to underline Amasa because later on he will come back into the story in a really bad way, but you just got to know it now. Joab has left. Joab is with David, if you remember. And so this guy named Amasa gets appointed head of the army. Amasa was the son of a man named Jether, an Israelite, who had married Abigail, the daughter of Nahash, and the sister of Zeruiah, and the mother of Joab. The Israelites and Absalom camped in the land of Gilead. When David came to Mahanaim, Shobi, son of Nahash, from Rabbah of the Ammonites, and Machir, son of Amiel, from Lo-Debar, and the greatest name in all of the Bible, Barzillai. Yes. Barzillai, the Gileadite from Rogalim, brought bedding and bowls and articles of pottery. They also brought wheat and barley, flour and roasted grain, beans and lentils, honey and curds, sheep and cheese from cow's milk. Yes, thank you for David and the people to eat, for they said the people have become hungry and tired and thirsty in the desert. We'll pick up, those people get mentioned a little bit later on as David returns back into the land. So as you can see, not much in terms of, it's an interesting story. We're moving the story along. But I was really struck by this Ahithophel character. I remember the first time I read that Ahithophel saw that his advice wasn't taken. So he went home and hung himself. And I thought to myself, the first thing that entered my mind was, is this guy the most arrogant dude in the world or what? I almost wanted to think that he was just the biggest baby in the world. Here he is giving out all this great advice, and there's one time that his advice is not followed, and he gets his little feelers hurt, runs home, and hangs himself. But then I started thinking about it more because usually my impression of biblical characters, especially on first blush, is usually wrong. Usually when you start thinking about it, you see exactly how human these people are and how often, if faced in the same circumstances, would we follow in the exact same footsteps. Think it through with me. What did Ahithophel believe that his advice was the correct advice? Yes, I think he believed, otherwise he wouldn't have given that advice. Did Ahithophel believe that the advice that Hushai gave was incorrect? Yeah, I think he believes with all of his heart, Absalom, you do this, it's going to be bad. It's a tactical mistake. He could have probably just sat there and said, this is a mistake. Yeah, we don't have the assessment of both forces. We don't know how much David is amassing. But Ahithophel essentially says, if we follow this advice, it's going to be... So let's follow this through. If Ahithophel really believes that Hushai's advice is bad, then that must mean that he believes that soon Absalom will be dead. Right? Your advice is bad, you're going to go into battle, and you're going to die. If Absalom dies, who's king? David. When David marches back into town, what is David going to do with Ahithophel? That's what we would think. That's what we would imagine. I think that that's what drove Ahithophel to do what he did. He said, instead of waiting around for something to happen to me, I'm going to take the matter into my own hand. I'm going to end my own life. I'm going to read to you a proverb. Proverbs 14:12. You may know it. It's been quoted before. There is a way that seems right to a man, but in the end it leads to death. I think we, in our very limited ability, because we can't predict the future, we often mistake what the future is really going to hold. I just walked you through exactly what Ahithophel said. We all came to the same conclusion. But dare I say that that probably would not have happened. And how can I prove this? I'm not going to try and give away the story a little bit later on, but chapter 19... I told you before that some of the stories that took place earlier were going to get fulfilled in chapter 19. And we'll go through what happened to Shimei. Do you remember Shimei? The rock thrower, dust tosser, cursing man. Let's follow this through to its natural conclusion, just like we did with Ahithophel, and let's see what we would come up with. If David returns as king, he is going to walk by the same house that Shimei came out of to start cursing him. And if you're David the king, what are you going to do to Shimei? Yeah. I think that our natural instinct, especially in stuff like this, is you get to me that way, now I'm coming back in power. Oh, you're dead. That's what we just said with Ahithophel, right? We just said that if David comes back as king, Ahithophel is as good as dead. We'll get into it later, but I'll tell you what happens. Shimei realizes that David is coming back. And Shimei runs out and meets David on the road, which is just crazy if you think about it, because if it was me, I'd be like hiding in my house like, I'm not here. He runs out and meets David and says, David, I screwed up. Now think about it. From what we know of David, if someone comes and repents to David, does David forgive? That's what he has done all along. We don't have an example of someone coming to David and saying, dude, I screwed up. And David said, too bad, you're dead. Over and over, we get actually the opposite, where David is very... very hesitant to do stuff against people. There's a couple times he gets very decisive, but most times he's very careful in that thing. He forgives Shimei for all of the stuff that he did. So now, think about what are the options for Ahithophel. What are the choices that Ahithophel has in this whole thing? People that do drastic things, such as taking their own life, are people that don't believe there are any other options left. And I think that that's sometimes how we get in life. We feel that way. We get set up against a certain problem, difficulty, circumstance, life situation. We look at that and we say, I got no choices. I am absolutely helpless and hopeless in this situation. I've got no options left. And when you have no options, crazy things happen. If only you could jump into the text and say, Ahithophel, there's an option. The option, Ahithophel, go to David and just say that you're sorry. Go to David and apologize for doing what you did. Throw yourself at the mercy of David, and David will be kind to you. That would be what I would love to do to be able to jump in the text. I can't jump into the text and tell Ahithophel. But what I can do is jump into your life and say the same thing. There's times when we are faced with such things. Sometimes we are faced with sin. Sin that is so great and so huge. Mistakes that we make and we look at that and we're like, oh my goodness, I cannot believe that I just did that. There is no way I'm going to receive grace. God could not forgive me of this sin. Or we get into a situation and we say, I don't have any other options but to sin, but to do something drastic, but to make a terrible mistake in my life. There's always options. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. You deserve death for the things that you... Ahithophel essentially deserved death. But the interesting thing is he had the option. I know that many of people in today's life feel like you're trapped. And I get the blessing on occasion to even help other pastors out. And it's really rough when a pastor goes through something that is so difficult that he just doesn't know what to do anymore. He literally feels trapped. Those are the words that I would hear. I feel trapped. I feel lost. He used words like, I feel like God has abandoned me. He uses words out of the Psalms like, God's thrown me into the pit and he's deserted me. God has left me. I've got no other choice. I'm trapped like a caged animal, and I don't know what to do anymore. I think that's how Ahithophel felt. Sure, yeah. And Ahithophel, yeah, his eternal destination is a tragedy. If only someone said you had a choice. There's a choice. When you get to the end of your rope and there is no other place to go, there is one final place to go. Let go. And God will be there. I hate saying those words because I know it sounds sometimes really trite and bumper sticker-ishy, right? If you are, let's say, for those of you that are in a good place right now, I want you to imagine back to a time when things felt that way, when things felt hopeless and dark and nasty. It's those times that it's very hard to hear things like, you know what, God is in control. God will make a way. God knows everything that's going on. When we're in the good times, it's really easy to say that, right? I mean, I'm in a great place right now, so when I say God is in control, it's like, yeah, heck yeah, he is. Things are humming along great. I always get nervous when I say things are going good in my life, because usually that's when, you know, something, yeah. It always happens that way, but I don't care. I'm going to say I'm in a good, our family's in a good place. We're just cruising along. Things are going good. When we do that, it's so simple to say God is sovereign. It is so simple to say God is in control. It's so simple to say God has a way. But I'm going to be honest, I don't have a good thing to say to those who are feeling dark and depressed and lost and confused and hopeless and helpless. The only thing I can say is that God does have a way. That's it. God is in control. And it doesn't feel like it. And all of the outlook on life is black and dark. But all I can say is that too will pass. Think back when you're a kid. I mean, I love, it's so much fun with my kids watching them grow up and some of the things that they encounter. I tell you, the drama that can happen, even with just boys, it's pretty amazing because everything seems so big. Because they might like a girl, but maybe that girl doesn't like them back. And it is the biggest, it is the worst day in human history. And I'm thinking to myself, dude, it ain't that bad. Don't worry, it's going to get a lot worse. There's going to be worse. You know, I almost want to say that. And I say that jokingly and fun because I wonder that God looks at your problems and he doesn't see a problem at all. Because he already sees you on the other side of the problem. He already sees you after you've come out of the darkness. Now, I'm going to be sure God is present through that. Yay. Though I walk through the valley of the shadow of death, I fear no evil, for God is with me. Yeah.
There was a guy kind of in similar circumstances to Manasseh.
Yeah, King Manasseh was the one that lit his house on fire. I mean, he was like, no, not that one.
No, the guy who was Hezekiah's son, and he led Israel, totally, or Judah, totally back into sin. And the king of Babylon took him, basically killed all of his kids in front of him, I think it was, put a hook in his nose, brought him to prison. And the scripture says that there he totally humbled himself before the Lord.
Yeah.
And the Lord listened and brought him back to his kingdom.
Yeah.
And that's when he knew that the Lord was.
Yeah. It's when you are in the darkest of times that you are actually most able to listen to God. It's when we take God off the table as an option that things get really bad. Most commentators comment that good old Ahithophel follows almost exactly the same trail as another traitor who kills himself in the whole process, and that's Judas. Because Judas didn't see another way. Because Judas didn't have God. Judas didn't have Jesus Christ. Yeah. If you are going through the darkest of times and the darkest of nights and the painfulest of circumstances, there is no magic way to get out of it. You can try as you want, but it just doesn't work. Someone once gave me the advice, Mark, when you're feeling dark and down and on the ground, the best thing to do is don't get up. Stay there. Because over and over in the Psalms, it's really, I'm having a great time reading the Psalms. I really hope you are too. Again, I've always believed that David was bipolar. He has some of the highest highs and the lowest lows. He is a real human. If you think David's a saint, I mean, you just got to read the Psalms. The dude is not. He has these horrible times and he has these great times. And that's how the Psalms are written. And over and over again, David said, I'm trampled down. I'm lost. I'm abandoned and forgotten. And it always seems to be followed up with, when I'm low, God, you lift up my head. When things are bad and things are dark and things are bleak, maybe it's just enough for us to say, I'll stay here until God lifts my head. And there is only one way to go. But never ever think that you don't have a choice. And I know sometimes we do this. And I know that that's why people do commit suicide and do drastic things. And I tell you, it doesn't solve issues. It doesn't actually solve anything. It only creates more chaos, especially for the people that are left behind. You always, always have an option. And that option is going back to God, pouring your heart out, and living in that darkness, and waiting for God to lift your head. I can't say it to Ahithophel, so I guess I'll say it to you. And if things are going great in your life, don't worry. Eventually they'll stink again. And hopefully you'll remember back to this sermon and you'll go, that's right. Sometimes things get bad. But I'm thankful that God is in control. God is sovereign. And that God does love me. Let's pray. Lord, thank you for stories in the Bible, because it's really neat to just read some of the dramatic things that take place. It really is. And I could totally see how this could work. And I'm amazed how you were gracious to the two spies and provided them with safety. But I pray, Lord, for those people that feel like Ahithophel. I think we've all gone through times in our life when it's so dark, and so depressing. And I know you don't mock us like I sometimes do with my children, say it's really not that big of a deal. But I know that theologically it really isn't that big of a deal. For Lord, everything in this life is simply temporary. Every painful thing we feel, every circumstance we go through, it's all temporary. If nothing else, Lord, help us to fix our eyes on you. So that whatever is happening around us, we don't see anything but you. That whatever is happening around us, all we know is that you're in control. And that even if nothing else makes sense, Lord, and I do, I pray for my pastor friend who's really struggling right now. Lord, I pray for the right words to say. But I pray that if nothing else, you would show your presence to him in a real way. That he would know that there's always options, and that option is always to come back to you. And throw himself, and as we all throw ourselves at your feet, asking for mercy. We thank you, Lord, that there is always a way. There is always a way with Jesus Christ, in whose name we pray. Amen.